I'm Mark Bayshore. What are the takeaways from Michigan News in January? That's what we attend to every 30 days here on Current State's Month in Review. Here to revisit the Governor's State of the State Address, the Lansing Women's March, and much more, Jonathan Osting of the Detroit News. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Abby Walds of the Michigan Information and Research Service, infinitely better known as MERS. Hi, Abby.
Hi, thanks.
And belated Happy New Year to both of you, too. It was Rick Snyder's next to the last State of the State, not quite 2 weeks ago now. Before it recedes any further into our memories and disappears altogether. What was your main takeaway, Jonathan?
Well, I think the State of the State Address usually serves two functions. The governor often takes a look backwards and then he takes a look forwards. And I think he spent more time on the former than the latter in this most recent speech. He talked a lot about some of the economic gains the state had made, but he set a few goals for the future, but what he didn't do is establish any real clear policy proposals or agenda that he wanted the legislature to pursue this cycle. I think he sort of, to some extent, realizes that the legislature is going to have its own ideas this year, so he didn't propose too much.
And David Kanisek kind of taking him to task on Facebook for that very thing, a long list of, he says here, in case you missed it, allow me to summarize Governor Rick Snyder's State of the State speech tonight. Nothing about reducing taxes for seniors or working families. And there are nine more or so. Nothing about, and the bottom one is, jokes about cows. So that made it to the State of the State. Lots of us were waiting to hear what he would say about Flint. It wasn't too much, and it was halfway or so through the address. Here's a little bit of that.
We took immediate action in the following days and months. We've worked tirelessly to make Flint's water safe to drink again and improve the entire city of Flint. We're making progress, but our work is not done yet.
Specifically, Abby, what did you take from the comments about Flint?
With regard to the comments about Flint, I think Jonathan is expressing what a lot of people thought, which is that it wasn't specific. But it also sort of departed from the reality of the world most Michiganders and their representatives are living in, which includes Flint. And since this was kind of had a feel-good, almost eighth State of the State address vibe, I think it's logical that Flint was hardly mentioned by name and given very little airtime, but it didn't really quite sit right with people who are or who have been dealing with this for the last 2 years.
You have to remember the governor spent almost his entire State of the State address on Flint 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were anxious and curious what he was going to say this time around. And the fact that I think he waited, as you mentioned, about a half hour into his speech befuddled a lot of people. And then he spent about maybe a minute or two at most on the topic. And people thought he sort of gave it short shrift.
And he very quickly tied it into the larger infrastructure issue, which I think to some was a sidestep of the sympathy that Flint residents are still going without at the executive level.
Here's a little bit of that response that you just alluded to, Abby. This is Democratic president of the Flint City Council, Kerry Nelson.
Not what he plans to do, nor what he has already inputted, such as some finance, but we do know that we need to hear a solution. How do you plan to correct this problem?
What did you make of his call for passing the 10 million mark in population? I was not expecting that. I'm not sure many people were.
Sure. I mean, it sounds like a nice goal. The state has grown population. But of course, what the governor didn't point out is that the state's population has been growing, but at a slower rate than some other states. Michigan is still poised to probably lose another congressional seat based on population when the next 10-year census comes out. There's some question whether the state might naturally achieve that population growth anyways, and whether that mark of 10 million is in fact as significant as the governor makes it out to be.
And what makes this a weird thing to bring up is the fact that when it was first raised by the governor two years ago, he was talking about refugee resettlement, which in today's political climate has become completely politically taboo. I mean, and so when you talk about raising the population at an exceeding rate and you don't, you kind of neglect the immigrant population, which has been the easy and quick source and the obvious source of population growth, it just kind of leaves one to make all of the obvious jokes.
Abigail Walls of MERS, Jonathan Osting of the Detroit News, its current state's month in review for January. Jonathan, you attended the Lansing Women's Rally last Saturday. Just give us some of your impressions.
Well, it was the largest rally at the Capitol since the Right to Work protests in 2012. According to Capitol Facilities Management, they told me they estimated about 9,000 people were there. So quite the crowd. I thought, there were a lot of negative signs, funny signs perhaps, criticizing Republican President Donald Trump. Most of the speakers were fairly hopeful. There was a message of unity and trying to rally together, even though clearly this was a form of protest against the current president one day after he was inaugurated. Gretchen Whitmer, one of the first declared candidates for governor in the state, spoke. I thought it was a great venue for her to get her message out as well.
Abby, Gretchen Whitmer officially became a candidate this month. She was all but an official candidate up until that point, and it didn't surprise anyone. What do you expect from her candidacy?
I think the fact that Gretchen Whitmer was at this rally tells you exactly what you're going to get. Some folks have called this march the liberal Tea Party, I've seen in the Washington Post headlines. And I think what you're going to get is you're going to get classic Gretchen Whitmer, somebody who really represents the left interests of the state and the vocally so. It remains to be seen in this election whether or not that harnessing that kind of anti-Trump sentiment is going to carry Democrats to victory, if she's really going to come out as the front candidate in this election, such as Republicans managed to pull off in 2010 against President Obama.
The Republican race has picked up a new name here just in the last couple of days, Dr. Jim Hines, who was in Lansing on Thursday, which was one stop on a 6 or 7 city tour of the state. Have either of you looked into Jim Hines, and are you learning about him along with everybody else?
Yeah, I was at his Lansing stop yesterday, and what I can tell you is he's not a new candidate for governor. He actually filed to run almost a year ago for governor. Problem is, nobody noticed. And that's an issue for a candidate with no name recognition really whatsoever outside of Saginaw, where he's from. He's an obstetrician. He's delivered a lot of babies and knows a lot of families. He's on some medical boards and things like that. But he'll be the first to admit he's an outsider, he's an unknown, and he's got a lot of work ahead of him.
He's got a lot of money, too.
Yeah,
I don't think he has Rick Snyder money. I mean, remember, Rick Snyder came out of nowhere, but Rick Snyder is a millionaire. I'm not sure. While doctors are certainly well compensated, I don't think he's going to be able to fund his campaign in the way Rick Snyder.
He contributed $140,000 of his own money campaign.
Yep. He put a lot of money in already, yeah.
Well, conventional wisdom says that it doesn't normally go well in the end, but I do think it's interesting that he has 30% name ID among Republican activists in the state, according to MRG. Now that, you know, that piques my interest. That is a tactic that was tried in the same 2010 gubernatorial election Jonathan was referring to with Governor Snyder, but it didn't really pan out because too many candidates were trying to take a bite at that apple.
Let's turn to another unexpected development, at least as far as I was concerned. The chair of the Senate Education Committee, Republican Phil Pavlo of St. Clair County, wants to get rid of Michigan's so-called failing schools law, saying the current law was passed with good intentions, but that it hasn't worked. How did Senator Pavlo end up in this place?
Well, as you mentioned, he chairs the Senate Education Committee, so he's talking to a lot of schools. He's talking to folks, parents, who are very scared right now that their school might be closed. The state released a list, in fact, just this week of schools, recently, of schools that could potentially close. Now, Phil Pavlov will be the first to tell you, bad schools should be closed. He agrees with that. He just doesn't think the way the current law is set up is appropriate or has been handled well by the governor's school reform office. They've put out several notices now and done some introductory fieldwork in schools that just has a lot of people very fearful, very scared about what the future holds, instead of giving them clear directions that, in fact, yes, you are going to be closed. Instead, they put a lot of schools on alert, and I think there's just a lot of anxiety in the state right now, and he's hearing that.
Let's listen to Senator Pavlo talk a little bit about this.
We want to put together a system that's fair and balanced, a system that districts understand where the goalpost is, what the metrics for defining a failing school is.
So, Jonathan, Abby, do we know anything about what he wants to replace the existing law with?
We don't know too much yet. He said he wants to repeal it and start a broad and difficult conversation about what that looks like. We know that as part of the Detroit Schools bankruptcy deal last year, there was an 8F grading system that was put in for Detroit. A lot of Republicans and conservative groups have pushed that same sort of idea for a statewide system, sort of modeled after that, you could say, test run in Detroit.
Abby, a Detroit-based federal judge, David Lawson, rejected Attorney General Bill Schuette's request to weigh in on a dispute involving the Flint water crisis. Could you remind us just of the background of this one?
Yeah, sure. So right now, the Attorney General's office is partitioned, arguing both sides of a case in which the state has got to provide in some way, has been mandated by the court to provide bottled water to residents of Flint who still cannot use their tap water without a filter. And Judge Lawson soundly rapped the Attorney General for presumably in the governor's view, playing politics with the situation, arguing both sides of the case. What is interesting is that the next day, the same judge turned around and gave the other side of the argument, the side of the argument that is trying to, so to be clear, the Attorney General was saying, was arguing that we should provide bottled water while the state has been involved in not providing bottled water. And Judge Lawson has come hard down on both sides of this case.
Mm-hmm. I was struck by his ruling here saying Mr. Schuette's amicus brief amounts to superficial posturing. What's he saying there, Jonathan?
Well, what he's saying there, he said, A, it didn't actually offer any new arguments. And it's interesting because the brief Schuette filed was generally supportive of the order that Lawson had already handed down, that water needed to be delivered. But what Lawson said is, you haven't really made any new points that plaintiffs haven't made in this case. And B, you've raised some interesting ethical issues because your office, attorneys from your office, even if they're on the other side of this firewall, have already appeared in court on behalf of state defendants. Again, like Abigail said, he was accused of trying to play both sides. The AG says that he has a responsibility constitutionally to defend state officials, but that he has a responsibility to the people of the state to work on their behalf as well. And he tried to file this brief on behalf of the people, ostensibly on behalf of the people of Flint, who he says he was trying to fight for.
Michigan Republicans, in the time that we have left, Michigan Republicans have a new state party chairman, Ron Weiser, Donald Trump's Michigan campaign manager, Scott Hagerstrom, losing that bid. How did this unfold exactly, Abby?
So it's been a little bit unusual because not many Trump's supporters, Trump leaders, have come behind Scott Hagerstrom. They all kind of turned around and came up to Ron Weiser, and this was certainly something that got brokered behind closed doors between Hagerstrom and Weiser. But it is interesting in that on this Trump wave that brought Ron Romney McDaniel into the RNC and others, Betsy DeVos, that Hagerstrom wasn't able to quite catch on.
He was worth the guy who became president.
Well, you got to remember, Ron Weiser is a longtime prolific fundraiser for the Michigan GOP. So he has a lot of friends who he's raised money for, including President Donald Trump. He helped raise funds for a joint victory fund that the president ran, and he also helped raise funds for his inauguration. So clearly, this was, you had, I guess, two Trump supporters, really. One guy who was on the ground running and the other guy who was making money for the campaign.
Very
and apparently that went out.
We want to thank Jonathan Osting of the Detroit News and Abigail Walls of MERS. It's been Current States Month in Review for January. Have a great February.
Thanks.
Thank you.